experience, or a death experience almost, that brought him to the realization that he was wrong. Then we discussed about, if we do realize that I have committed a mistake, then the three steps that we can take is accept, apologize, and correct ourselves. So yesterday we discussed about relationships where our interaction with another person leads to a mistaken judgment. Today we will discuss about a mistaken judgment in relationships based on a wrong set of values. So there are values and there are principles. Principles are universal, whereas values are specific. Values are individual. For example, you know, the word values is related to what we value. So, you know, if there is a, there was earlier the Cold War between America and USSR. So there, each country values its own prestige, its own power, its own national resources. That's an individual value. As a principle, say the protection of humanity, the respect for human life, that is a universal value. So if our values are not aligned with principles, then we make mistakes in our decisions. I'll make this simpler with an example. So the three brothers, and they chose two paths. So there's a related values, there is a moral crisis and there is an ethical crisis. When we say there is a moral crisis, that means there are two choices, where one is moral, the other is immoral. But one is tempted by the forces of immorality towards the immoral choice. Like for Ravana, whether to abduct Sita or not. No, there was no moral justification for his doing that. He just fell prey to lust completely. So all of us experience these pullings, where the distinction between morality and immorality is quite clear. And we sometimes fall prey to moral lapses. So Ravana fell prey to a moral lapse. But his two brothers, now at least within this pastime, Kumbhakarna is not described as lusty. So Kumbhakarna fell prey not to a moral error, but to an ethical error. So what is the difference between a moral and ethical error? In an ethical crisis, there are two choices. Both of them seem to be moral. But one is a higher morality, the second is a lower morality. For example, if somebody has decided that I will never speak a lie, and it's good. But in the Puranas, there is a story, a Brahmana had taken a vrata that he will never speak a lie. And at that time, he saw, he was sitting under a tree in a crossroad in a village, and he saw a cow running terror-stricken. And the cow came from this direction and then went towards the right. And then afterwards, then a short time later, a butcher came running, waving a bloody knife. And he asked this Brahmana, where did the cow go? Now, if he had to be truthful, he would have to let the cow be killed, be the cause of the killing of the cow. On the other hand, if he decided not to be truthful, then he would lose his truthfulness in order to save the cow. So here both choices are in one sense moral. One is the choice of truthfulness, the one other is the choice of protection of life. So he decided not to speak. He decided, I have to speak, I have to preserve my vow of truthfulness, but I will not utter. So just pointed with his hand. And a short time later, the cow was slaughtered and the butcher came back with the flesh. It's a long story, but this story is given in the Puranas, a backflash to another story. There's a Brahmana who was a mendicant traveling from village to village. And he came to a particular village, and he would normally sleep under a tree. But that particular night it was raining. So when it was raining, he asked for shelter at the house of another Brahmana, who was a householder. And then when he was sleeping, at that time, the lady in that house, she became lusty towards him. and she started seducing him. So when she was seducing him, he said, "No, you are like my mother." And when he refused her, she, in a fit of rage, she took a knife, and her own husband was sleeping. She pierced, and her husband just died on the spot. And then immediately started ripping her own clothes, screaming, "Save me, save me, save me." And the neighbors came there, and the neighbors came and she said, "What happened?" He says, "This wicked person in the guise of a Brahmana, he wanted to molest me. And when my husband tried to protect me, he killed my husband." And then the village council was called and they discussed the whole matter. And then they decided he's a Brahmana, so he should not be killed, but still he should be punished. So they decided to cut off his hands. And then he was crestfallen going along and he prayed to the Lord, "My dear Lord, why did such a calamity befall me for no fault of mine?" And because he was sincere, the Lord revealed the reason to him. The Lord told him that in your previous life, you were that truthful Brahmana, that person who was supposed to be very truthful. And that cow had become that woman. And the butcher had become her husband. Now, I'm sorry, the husband was not a Brahmana. He's just a human being. He had taken shelter at their house. So he said, because the butcher had killed the cow, so in this life, the cow became a woman and she killed the butcher, who was her husband. And because you with your hands pointed in the direction of the cow, so your hands were cut. So here we see the subtle working of the law of karma, where he did not apparently make an immoral choice, but he made an ethically wrong choice. And he had to bear the consequences for that. So now, in the case of Kumbhakarna and Vibhishan, Ravana was there. For both of them, Ravana was the elder brother. And in the Vedic culture, you know, to follow, to obey the older brother is considered a noble duty. After the father, the older brother, the principle of primogeniture applies. So that's why, you know, people say that you should tell brother that Lakshman followed Ram, the younger brother should follow the older brother. That is, of course, Ram and Lakshman are exemplary in that. But that is the principle which was prevalent in Vedic culture. And Ravana was actually born in the Brahmana family. Now, Ravana's grandfather was a great sage named Pulastya. And Pulastya begot a son named Vishrava, who was himself also a great sage. But Kaikashi, who was a daughter of a Rakshasa named Malyavan. So Malyavan saw that the only way the Rakshasa had lost their power, it's a long story which comes in the Uttarakhand of the Ramayana. I won't go into the background, but Malyavan felt that the only way the Rakshasas can regain their lost prowess, the Rakshasas had been routed earlier by Lord Vishnu in a battle. So at that time he felt that only if we can get a son from a powerful Brahmana in our kula, then our Rakshasa race will be redeemed. So that's why he asked Kaikashi to approach Vishrava. And Kaikashi was that way, although she had been born in a Rakshasa family, she was relatively virtuous. And she approached Vishrava, and Vishrava agreed to her. But he told her that you have approached me at a wrong time, at an inauspicious time. So we know in the Srimad Bhagavatam also it is described that because Diti approached Kashyapa at a wrong time, that's why Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were born. So actually in the modern times, most people unite within even the thought of procreation. What to speak of thinking about the consequence or the time of appropriateness or inappropriateness. But the consciousness of the uniting mother and father at the moment of conception determines which particular soul, or rather which sperm. There are many sperms which contain many, many souls. But for doctors, they feel that the sperm that is the fetest that goes to the, enters the womb, reaches the egg and impregnates it, inseminates it. But from the scriptural point of view, among the various souls that are there, the specific soul whose consciousness matches with the consciousness of the parents at the moment of conception, that is the sperm which succeeds in reaching the egg. And accordingly, the progeny that is born is of that level of consciousness. So the caste system, which was prevalent in India, actually the word caste is a Western conception. In Vedic culture, there is no such thing as caste. There is what is called class. Class means it's a division of labor. But that division of labor to some extent was according to birth, because when a Brahmana and a Brahmani would unite, at that time they would do proper purificatory rituals. And that's why a child who would be born would normally be of a Brahmanical consciousness. And the same applied to the other Varnas also. But there are also examples of exceptions, where somebody from a lower Varna exhibited a higher quality than the qualities of higher Varna, then he would be accepted as belonging to higher Varna. So when the Europeans came to India, in Europe they had the aristocracy, where Queen Elizabeth and Prince Charles and Williams, they have aristocracy. We've seen it going on in their royal family even now. And that was going on for a long time. So there the class was determined by birth. And they came and imposed their conception on India. So the principle is that actually the profession, the Varna, is determined by qualities. But the qualities are determined by the, among many factors, this itself is a separate class, there are five factors which determine our behavior. One is our past karma, the second is our upbringing, third is our association, fourth is our free will, and fifth is God's grace. So some of us are short-tempered. So why are we short-tempered? It could be because of a past karma. Our past karma influences us through our genes. What modern science calls as genes, you know, they say that because of certain genes, people are short-tempered. Because of certain genes, people are more emotionally vulnerable, where they become depressed or shaken up very quickly. That's their idea. So genes are one of the factors which influence. But genes, why do certain genes take control in certain people's life? That's because of the past karma. So these five factors are there. Our past karma coming through us as genes. Our upbringing, the way our parents lived and taught us to live. The third is our association. The fourth is our own free will. You'll see that many times parents take great care of their children as long as they're in their stewardship. But once the children go into the hostels, the upbringing is good, but the association becomes bad and they become spoiled. But sometimes, even in spite of bad association, some people can stay pure. That's because we have free will. So all these three factors, our past karma as our genes, our upbringing and our association, they push us, but they don't force us. They push us and we have our free will by which we can counter push. So we will see in this example, in the example over here, although Ravana and Kumbhakarna, along with their other family members, Khara, Dushan, Shurpanakha, they were all demoniac. But Vibhishan was not demoniac, because he used his free will differently. For him, the upbringing was the same, the association was also more or less the same, but his free will was different. He used his free will differently. And the fifth factor is God's grace. Now, our free will may sometimes be weak, and we may want to make certain choices, but we may not be able to, just like talking about falling prey to moral lapses. But we can access God's grace by chanting his holy names, by praying to him, and that makes our willpower stronger. So anyway, in this particular case, Vishrava told Kaikashi that because you have approached me at an inauspicious time, so the children who will be born of you will be demoniac. So Kaikashi said, I'm sorry, I did not know this. I don't want demoniac children. So she very sincerely begged forgiveness. So Vishrava was a great sage. He said, I cannot entirely avert the influences of time, but I will grant you a blessing as the last son that will be born to you. The youngest son will be very virtuous. And he will redeem your lineage when it is wrecked by the misdeeds of your oldest son. So that youngest son was Vibhishan. Now, Ravana and the others went to do tapasya to please Brahma so that they would acquire some powers. Now Ravana Kumbhakarna and Vibhishan, all three of them went. The other brothers had also done some tapasya. And eventually when Brahmaji came, at that time Ravana asked, please grant me immortality. So Brahmaji said, sorry, wrong number. Even I am not immortal, how can I grant you immortality? So then Ravana used his wily mind and he said, okay, please grant me that I will not be killed. And he named all the races in the universe, or other species, classes in the universe, who were powerful. Grant me that I will not be killed by a Rakshasa, or a Devata, or a Gandharva, or a Yaksha. This, long list he rattled off. And he specifically said, don't grant me any protection from humans or monkeys, humans or animals, because they are insignificant. That was his pride was still there. Even when asking for a blessing, there was pride. So, then Kumbhakarna was already very powerful. He was monstrous in size and ferocious in power. So, when Kumbhakarna was about to ask the benediction, all the devatas fervently prayed to Brahma. They said, he's already monstrously powerful. If you give him benedictions, I don't know what he will do. So, please. So, Brahmaji prayed to, requested Saraswati. And Saraswati came on the tongue of Kumbhakarna. And Kumbhakarna wanted to ask, grant me Nityatvam. Nitya means eternal. Grant me eternal existence. So, he wanted to ask something like Nitya Astitvam. Astitvam means existence. But Saraswati Devi played with his tongue and he asked Nitya Nidratvam. Nidra means sleep. So, he said, Brahmaji immediately said, Tathastu. And I said, no! He said, if I wanted to sleep, I didn't have to do austerity. I can sleep without that also. It's unfair. He said, no, Brahmaji said, I have already given the benediction to you. So, I can't do anything. He said, no, I did so much austerity to please you. This is cheating. He also understood something is wrong over there. But then Brahmaji had compassion. He said, okay. Now, there are some details in the Ramayana which are different in different places. That refers to different yugas, because these pastimes keep happening again and again. So, Kumbhakarna was told that for 6 months you will sleep, then one day you will wake up, and again 6 months you will sleep. And some places it says 6 months sleep, 6 months wakefulness, but this is more repeated in most places. So, then Vibhishan's turn came, and Vibhishan prayed, please grant me devotion to Lord Vishnu, and please bless me so that I can forever remember his lotus feet. And this benediction was something which Brahmaji was very pleased to give. Other benedictions he reluctantly gave. So, that was Vibhishan's nature was different. Now, Ravana became very powerful, monstrously powerful, and terrorized the whole universe. And because he was in a Rakshasa family, they had a particular disposition. So there was his sister Shurpanakha, who tried to, first she wanted to seduce Ram. When she failed, she tried to attack Sita. And then Lakshman did no surgery for her, with no replacement. And then she fled. She went and complained to Kardushan, where her brother was in Janasthan. And Lord Ram single-handedly defeated and annihilated not only Kardushan, but along with him all their 14,000 assistants. And then there was only one assistant who was left. He was Akampan. And this Akampan fled. So, he fled all the way from Jansan down to the Indian Peninsula and across the ocean to Lanka. And when he came into the assembly of Ravana, his name was Akampan, but he was doing full Kampan. Trembling in fear. So, Ravana asked him, what is the matter? He could see that he was very frightened. So, first he folded his, please promise me that you will not kill me for the news that I will give you. You know, kings have this propensity. If somebody gives good news, they will lavishly reward them. Somebody brings bad news, they're so angry, first they kill the messenger only. The harbinger of inauspiciousness. So please grant me that you will not kill me. So, I said, tell me what I have. No, first you tell me. First you grant that you will not kill me. So, Ravana said, yes, tell me. I said, your brothers Karandushan along with all the army in Janasthan has been killed. Ravana sprang up from his seat in anger. He said, how is it possible? So where all the gods and the Gandharvas and the Yakshas combined together to kill them? He said, no, there was no god, no Gandharva, no Yakshas. Who killed them? It was one human being. One human being? Impossible. He says, it's true. Who was that human being? So that was the son of Dasharatha, Ram. And then he told the whole story. And then Ravana said, right now, I will take my full forces and rid the earth of this wicked Ram. And then I will march to Ayodhya and destroy Ayodhya in revenge. So Akampan told him, please don't do such a thing. He said, I have seen the prowess of Ram's arrows. No being in the three worlds can counter him. Now he did not attack us. We went and attacked him first. Shurpanakha went and attacked Sita first. So it is we who are the aggressors and we have reaped the consequences. If we face Ram, there is no chance that we will win. Now Ravana was furious with what had happened, but still he knew that Akampan was an experienced general and he respected his assessment of Ram's prowess. And he started thinking, soon my paths will cross with Ram, we will deal with him later. And then the matter ended. After some time, Shurpanakha came there. And she came and just started, fell at the feet of Ravana and started crying. She was holding her nose first. And crying. Just see what injustice has happened in your kingdom. How can you tolerate such injustice? How can you let it go unpunished? Yes, what happened? Tell me. And then she took off her nose. Her nose was cut off. And the nose being cut off is not only disfiguring, but is also humiliating. Ravana, who has dared to do this to you? So I will send him to the abode of Yama right away. He said, that was the wicked Ram. And as soon as Ravana heard the word Ram, he remembered Akampan's warning and he completely cooled down. And when Shurpanakha saw that Ravana had cooled down, she became all the more angry. And Shurpanakha is also a demoniac personality, so she has demoniac intelligence. So she immediately changed. First she was telling Ravana, telling to chastise him, goad him into action. But she knew that more than his family pride, there was something which would goad him to action even more. And that was lust. She, did you know why I had gone to that Ram? Now she knew why she had gone to that Ram, to seduce him. And then she had tried to attack Sita. She said, no, actually that Ram has a very beautiful wife, Sita, and started describing her beauty. And Ravana's imagination was fired by that. And he said, no, I had gone there to get that Sita as a wife for you. I felt that she would be the perfect crown in your palace, in your among your queens. This is how demons completely distort the data. You know, people have this agenda, and according to their agenda, they totally twist the whole story. And actually our news media is to some extent like that. Sometimes we get a completely distorted version of the story. You know, I write for newspapers and I work with the media. So the media does not report news. The media creates news. Whatever gets reported becomes the news. So anyway, Shurpanakha completely distorted the story. She told, for your sake I had gone and Sita is so beautiful. And then Ravana, and as he described more and more, she could see that was having an effect on Ravana. And she went on describing more and more details of Sita's beauty. And then Ravana was completely agitated. And he went forward and fell prey. So to some extent, the modern media is like the Shurpanakha industry. Shurpanakha industry. Actually, it triggers the lowest desires in us. And among all desires, you know, that which can bring out the lowest is lust. Lust refers to man for woman, woman for man. Nowadays it's a man for man, woman for woman. All these things are happening. How? It's just lust being triggered. And the media systematically triggers the lust. And if we see, you know, we have five senses. And modern technology has made the sense objects for all these senses more and more appealing. If you see, in a normal society we live, There are some people who are good looking, some people who are average looking, and some people are not good looking. It's for both the sexes. But when the media is there, the media will show us the movies, the songs, they will show us the most good looking people from the all around the world. And what happens is that stimulates our desire the most. Similarly, with respect to everything, the most good looking people, the most good looking sounds, the most good looking taste, that's what are advertised. And when we get habituated to that sort of sense objects in the virtual world created by the media, then whatever we get in the real world will never satisfy us, no matter how good it may be. And that's why the great achievement of modern civilization is that it can make the wealthiest person perpetually dissatisfied. Whereas the great achievement of Vedic civilization was that even a poor person would be satisfied. So that, why? Because you know, if you see the music, the sounds, there are stereo effects and all kind of multiple effects to make them more and more agitating, more and more aphrodisiac, especially stimulating the sexual impulse. So it's actually the Surpanakha industry, and it literally drives people mad. You know, most of the advertisements are for what purpose? They are for making all some already wealthy people still wealthier. And for that, they exploit the bodies of women and the basest desires of men, and they keep people in a state of perpetual sexual agitation. And it's so unfortunate what results by this. And most of the time, this is never questioned. You know how this works is, I call this WWS. It's a worldwide stupidity. What is this worldwide stupidity? You know, if you see, people, their lives, first of all, everybody has to work for earning a living. And then they work, then they come back home. And especially in the Western countries, and nowadays in the westernized countries also, like India, people's time, non-working time, is spent in two main activities. And they come back home, and they sit in an easy chair, and they watch TV. That's the second W. Work, and then watch. And they watch TV, they expect to get some relaxation and some entertainment, but whatever the program, whether it be sports, or whether it be movies, or whether it be serials, within it all, whether it be, when it be spiritual or religious programs, in between they have commercials. And basically, what is a commercial? The advertisement basically tells you, you know, your shoes are wrong, your dress is wrong, your mobile is wrong, your car is wrong, and you have to set it right. And how do you set it right? By purchasing a new one. So, you know, if you see, there are something which so frivolously change. So, the hairstyle, the dress style, actually, in the West, the cosmetic surgery industry. You know, cosmetic surgery means what? Like somebody feels that my nose is not so big, so I'll make it bigger. Or my face is not shaped in a particular way. The cosmetic industry, cosmetic surgery industry, is a $13 billion industry. Now, if the money from the cosmetic surgery industry was taken, there would not be a single starving person in the world. Everybody could be fed by that money. So this is what? This is just completely artificial need created. And it's found that most of the time, it's not just people who look very mediocre or poor, they go. Even good-looking people are pressurized. You know, you have black hair, you should have blonde hair. If you have blonde hair, you should have black hair. And if you have tried both, then they have something else to do. Like, you know. Now my brother is in America now. He's studying there in Chicago. So he recently got a driver's license. So he told me when he was filling the driver's license, and normally we have your name, your age, your nationality, and then you have the gender. So normally we just write M or F. So this is America, things are not so simple. There's a gender. What is your present gender? What was your past gender? Why? The cosmetic surgery industry, you know, it tries to change your gender also. So the people who change their gender, they are called as gender benders. So it seems ridiculous to us, but that's simply because we have not been exposed to that propaganda. If we are exposed to that propaganda, you know, even we may fall prey to it. That is the power of the media. You know, what is the evil genius of advertising? The evil genius of advertising is that which is totally unnecessary, we feel it is absolutely necessary. that which is totally unnecessary. You know, Ravana had Mandodari, he had so many other queens, he had so many servants. For him, Sita was totally unnecessary. That is totally unnecessary. We feel it is absolutely necessary. So what happens? We work, we watch, and then when we watch the TV, it creates so many desires. So then we shop. So actually, shopping takes so much time. And nowadays, people don't even have to go to the soup cafes or to the market. You know, we have internet shopping also. So things come to your home. So actually, people's leisure time, means non-working time, goes in these two main activities. Watching and shopping. So what happens? People work and then they come home and watch. And they feel, oh, I have to purchase it. They go and shop. And when you shop, it doesn't come free. So then you have to work more. And after you work more, you get more tired. So you feel, I need more relaxation. And then we watch more TV. And we watch more TV. Then we get more desires. And we shop more. So work, watch, shop. Work, watch, shop. That's what WWS, worldwide stupidity. You know, that is what is happening today. And the media makes so many cheap and false promises, but we fall prey to them. That's the power of propaganda. So as I said, Ravana was not a foolish person. He was an intelligent person. But Shurpankha knew his weakness, and she fully exploited that weakness. So similarly, that's what happens with the media. You know that actually for most people, lust is their weakness. And from lust, greed comes. From lust, anger comes. And everything else comes. Actually, there's an American who wrote a book called Four Reasons for Banning TV. It's a well-researched book. He was himself in the media industry. And so he shows us statistics that within 10 years of the introduction of television in a third world country, introduction and propagation, within 10 years of the introduction and propagation of TV in a third world country, the crime rate in the third world country increased by almost 10 times. It inevitably happens. Why? Because the television will create desires. And those desires cannot be fulfilled by honest means. Then people resort to dishonesty. So anyway, Ravana made this moral blunder. He already had that moral weakness. And he fell prey to Shurpankha's incitation. And then eventually he abducted Sita. Now, after he abducted Sita, Lord Ram sent Hanuman. And Hanuman was a single monkey who went in and created devastation. And when he burned Lanka and he was going back, he screamed out in his loud voice, "Oh Ravana, when a king sends a messenger, he sends the least of his warriors as a messenger. So I am the least of the warriors in Ram's army. Think what is going to happen to you when the least soldier can do such a thing." And everybody practically in Lanka was petrified. Then Ravana called a full assembly. And he spoke very gravely. He said, now incidentally, that was the one day when Vibhishan was, when Kumbhakarna was also awake. So Ravana said that, you know, this city of Lanka, which we had earlier considered impenetrable, both because of the ocean and because of our own protection through wars and soldiers, has been penetrated and reduced to ashes by a single monkey. He has converted, he has destroyed my favorite gardens. He converted the Ashok Vatika into a Shok Vatika for Ravana. Ravana was lamenting. Actually, that was his favorite garden. That's why he had kept Sita over there. Sita was so strict that she refused to... Ravana took her into a palace. And he showed him the whole palace, you know, to try to tempt her. So Sita completely refused. She said, "My husband has been sentenced to exile. So as long as he is in exile, I will also not stay in any palace." That's why he took her to the Ashok Vatika and kept her there. Otherwise, he would have kept her in the royal opulence. He refused. So even Lord Ram, I think I mentioned yesterday, when Hanuman invited Lord Ram to the palace after the killing of Vali, he said, "No, I cannot even enter a village. What to speak of a kingdom or a palace? I will stay in the forest." So because he was so infatuated with Sita, he kept her in his most loud and most beautifully maintained gardens. So he destroyed my favorite garden. He killed several of our leading generals, including my own son Aksha. So considering this, let us plan what we should do now. So Then Ravana starts speaking political wisdom. He says, actually a king who acts without that taking the advice of his wise ministers is doomed. But a king who consults his wise ministers and then acts accordingly is always sure to attain victory. So please tell me, what is your opinion of what we should do? Now, although he called his ministers as wise, he already knew what they were going to speak, because they had similar Rakshasa mentality. So this commander Prahastha got up. He said, this Vanara, this monkey, derisively use the word monkey for it. This monkey, he caught us by surprise. Otherwise, if we had known he is coming, I alone would have not only killed him, but hundreds of monkeys like him. Next time, if he is going to come, we'll be prepared. And Virupaksha, another soldier got up, general got up. He said, why should we be afraid? Rather, we should take revenge before they can come here. Ravana was sure that somehow Ram would cross the ocean and come, although he did not know how. Before they come here, let us send our soldiers there and take them by surprise. Just as Hanuman took us by surprise, let us take them by surprise and defeat and kill them. Later, all of them started speaking, bragging their own prowess. And finally, Vibhishan got up. And as Vibhishan waited for the clamor in the assembly to die out, and then he spoke that the experts advise war only when all other means to resolve a conflict has failed. And moreover, war is advisable only when the enemy is weaker, the enemy is condemned by their own misdeeds, or the enemy is immoral. He says, as far as we are concerned, we have not tried any other means to resolve the conflict. And our enemy is certainly not weaker than us, if one general from the army is some indication. And Ram is virtue incarnate, and all the gods are helping him. So only a fool will advise war in such a situation. Ravana did not like the advice of Vibhishan. Actually, Vibhishan was not involved in the political administration of Lanka, because Vibhishan also was a spiritually minded person, so he would do his devotion. And Ravana also knew that Vibhishan was not like us. Now, Ravana, it's described in one of the later retellings of the Ramayana, that Vibhishan would never take, whenever, you know, they were all family get-togethers, so family get, he would never take the food that others would take. He would never eat, Rakshasas eat not only meat, but they eat human flesh. But Vibhishan would never eat any such thing. Vibhishan would only eat Vishnu Prasad. So, he was of a different nature. So, that's why Ravana also wanted to keep him aside. But still, he was a part of the royal family. And whenever there was an assembly, he would come there. So, Vibhishan's advice made Ravana a little circumspect, a little cautious. So, he dismissed the assembly. He said, tomorrow morning, I'll make the decision. And then immediately, all the generals clamored around Ravana and they said, there is no need to fear for us. And the next morning, early morning, Vibhishan at dawn went to Ravana's palace and told him that ever since Sita has been kidnapped, I am seeing inauspicious signs everywhere. I am seeing that the cows are not giving any milk. The sacrificial fires, see, even the Rakshasas had Brahmanas. And the Brahmanas would do yajnas for them. You see, even Bali Maharaj, he was a demoniac person in one sense, before he manifested his devotion to Vishnu. But even he had Shukracharya as his priest. So even the Devatas, Asuras, they both understood that by the performance of yajnas, they attain higher powers. So the modern atheists, that means even the demoniac people understood that there is some higher power. Their idea was, from that higher power, we will get power and we will become more powerful. But the modern idea is that there is no higher power, we just have to use our brains and find out how to become powerful. So anyway, he said, in the sacrificial fire, so the Rakshasas had special Brahmanas who were called Yatudhanas. So whenever the Yatudhanas light the fires, the sacrificial fire is surrounded by smoke and emits sparks, and the fire is very less. He says, the jackals are continuously howling. The horses are always looking crestfallen, even when they are well fed. So I feel all this indicates the imminent disaster of our race. So please, the only way this disaster can be avoided is if you return Sita to Ram. Ravana grunted contemptuously. He says, what need do I have to be afraid of one mortal? And he said, as far as this monkey is concerned, he just took us by surprise. He got that reason. He took us by surprise. That's what he was repeating again and again. And Vibhishan pleaded with him, but Ravana dismissed him. Then they went to the assembly. When the assembly came, as soon as everybody had assembled, Ravana ordered a full council of war. As the full council of war came, Vibhishan was observing all this. He was realizing it was all more and more hopeless. He then told Prahastha, make sure that all our borders are securely guarded. Prahastha went and gave orders and then came back. And then he said, Ravana said, based on our discussion yesterday, I have decided that we should prepare for war. Ram will soon come with his army and we will have to fight them. So all the generals cheered. Vibhishan got up. He realized he had to make one last attempt. He said, who is that evil-minded person who has put the immense and highly venomous snake in the form of Sita around your neck? He says, the smiles of Sita are like the fangs of that snake. The bosom of Sita is like the coils. And her thoughts of Ram are like the poison of that snake. Now, the goddess of fortune, how can somebody compare her to a snake? And that too a poisonous snake. You see, it's a very profound analogy. Vibhishan is a very wise person. The goddess of fortune becomes the goddess of misfortune when we try to separate her from the Lord and use her for our own exploitation. That's why saying, her thoughts of Vishnu, of Ram, are her poison. He says, who has put this around your neck? She will cause your destruction. Just as when realizes a snake is around one neck, one throws it away. He says, cast the Sita away. Return her honorably back to Ram. Otherwise, our whole dynasty will be destroyed. So Indrajit got up. He says, oh uncle, I have never seen a coward like you in our dynasty. Surely you are devoid of all virility and manliness. That's why you propose surrender even before the enemy has attacked. So Indrajit, Vibhishan spoke strongly. He said, Indrajit, you are but a child. And your few successes in war have made you overestimate your prowess. Ram is not like Indra or Chandra or the other devatas that you have defeated. Your pride will soon be destroyed by Ram. He said, although you are the son of your father, you are actually his enemy. Because if he follows your advice, you will be the cause of his death. Ravana could take it no more. He turned around and screamed at Vibhishan. He said, it is said that an enraged serpent is better than a friend and an enemy in the guise of a friend. Now he concocted his own story. The demons are expert at this. He says, you are envious of me. Because I am the ruler of Lanka. You want to usurp my position. And that's why you are creating rifts within us. So if you had not been my brother, I would have killed you right now. You are a wicked rascal. So Vibhishan went and humbly begged to Ravana. He said, even if you consider me insincere, even if you consider me cowardly, still my words are meant for your well-being. Please do not neglect them. He fell at the feet of Ravana. Otherwise, it will cause the destruction of the whole Rakshasa dynasty. Ravana, in his arrogance, kicked Vibhishan away. And Vibhishan fell on the palace and everybody started laughing. So they were enjoying his humiliation. But Vibhishan was unfazed. He turned around, he said, when people are on the verge of death, they laugh like this. And Vibhishan said, turned to Ravana and he said, I am done with you. I did all that I could. Now I am leaving. And Ravana didn't try to stop him. Then Ravana went to his mother. He had already thought of a plan of action. Ravana had, Kumbhakarna had 4 faithful ministers. So he had consulted them. They had told him, before this meeting only, he knew more or less what was going to happen. So they had told him, you have 3 options. One is, if you feel that what Ravana is doing is wrong, then you create within the Rakshasa camp a division. And you defeat Ravana by a war and then hand Sita over to Ram. That is not possible. Then you just renounce the world and go to the Himalayas and meditate. Or you go over to the side of Ram and tell him that it is not at all Rakshasa like-minded and they agree with the abduction of Sita. So that Ram will not wreak vengeance on everybody in the Rakshasa dynasty, but only those who are culpable. So he went to his mother Kaikashi and sought her blessings. So he told her the whole story. He says, Ravana's ego is going to soon bring out his destruction. She told him what Vishrava had told, that you will be the redeemer of our race. Then Vibhishan immediately went across. And I'll come to that part of the story later. But within this assembly itself, one more thing happened. You know, on the first day when Kumbhakarna was there, on the assembly, so what should we do? Ravana had asked. So all the warriors said that, let us fight. So Kumbhakarna angrily shouted at Ravana. He said, you are consulting us now, but whom did you consult before you decided to kidnap Sita? Ravana felt angered by this. And then he said, still, although you committed that mistake, you should not worry. Because you have a brother like me, who can set right whatever mistake you do. So therefore, you have nothing to fear. Now, Kumbhakarna, to some extent, was not blinded by lust like Ravana was. And he knew the power of Ram. He had witnessed the power of Hanuman. So anyway, Kumbhakarna went to sleep. And then, one by one, Ravana started sending his soldiers. And everybody was annihilated. I'll talk about Vibhishan's surrender toward the end of the class. But what happened was, and finally, Indrajit went, and Indrajit's trick was, he tried to use a Nagapash to tie up and kill Ram and Lakshman, but Garuda came there and saved them. And then Ravana himself entered the fray, and Lord Ram totally humiliated him, defeated him and sent him fleeing. And Ravana was very disturbed. He thought, now Kumbhakarna is on only shelter. So he called Kumbhakarna, he woke him up. And Kumbhakarna, he had such a huge body that he could not sleep. There was no palace that could be built for him. So actually there was a big cave underground, cavern where he would sleep. And the Rakshasas went and they started screaming. First they started singing his praises, but nothing happened. They started screaming. Then they started beating him, then nothing happened. Then they started, you know, pounding him with drums and nothing happened. And then they started ripping his hair and still nothing happened. Then the elephants were running on his body up and down. And he felt a slight tickling sensation.
And then finally,
Kumbhakarna got up. He said, why have been I awakened like this? Is everything well with Lanka? Or if there is some danger, then I will avert it. And they had kept food ready for him. For Tamoguna, you know, eating and sleeping are two primary activities. Mating requires a mode of passion. So, he started gulping things down. Then, Virupaksha told him that, you know, all that had happened. And Kumbhakarna was not surprised. He said, I was expecting this. I was expecting. But, Ravana has a brother like me. And then he went to Ravana's palace. And as he was going to the palace, his body was so huge. Actually, Lanka was surrounded by the walls. But his body towered above the walls. And when the Vanaras saw his huge body, he was screeching in horror and they fell back. And he said, Ram, Ram, Ram! He started screaming. Ram came out with his bow in hand. They pointed, wordlessly just pointed over there. And Ram looked up at that monstrous being. And he asked him, who is this? What is this? And Vibhishan said, that is my brother.
Your brother? Then he told the whole story.
And then Vibhishan suggested something interesting. He said, you can tell the Vanaras that actually this is not a Rakshasa, this is just a machine. It's just a mechanical contraption. Otherwise, they will become very fearful and they will not be able to fight. So Ram said, there is no need for such strategies. I will personally take care of him. And then Kumbhakarna went into the palace, and he changed his form, became smaller so that he could enter the palace, and then he bowed down to Ravana. Ravana was in his pushpak. He was thinking, I have to use my pushpak to fight. And then he asked him to sit on a chariot, and then he told him the whole story. And Kumbhakarna said, again Kumbhakarna chastised him. He said, no, you are foolish. That's why you kidnapped Sita like this. And now you are reaping the consequences of your folly. If you had listened to your well-wishers at that time, then Lanka would not have faced a disaster. So Ravana felt angry. But he needed Kumbhakarna's help. So he was also a diplomat. So he very skillfully used his words. He said, you know, what use is it now to ask whether what I did was right or wrong? Now the greatest danger that we have ever faced confronts us. Now is the time not for words, for action, but for actions. The question is, are you just going to lecture here, or are you going to do your duty as a brother? So Kumbhakarna became somewhat pacified. He said, actually I will never fail in my duty as a brother. As your well-wisher and brother, I gave you some good advice. But as your brother, now I will march into the battle. And by tonight, Ram's head will be at your feet. And Kumbhakarna also spoke this. If Ram, I promise you, if I am not able to bring back Ram's head, then I will not come back from the battlefield. So Ravana said, you don't have to worry about these things. If you march in the battle, then you will surely be victorious. So Kumbhakarna, actually, he was not a devotee. But he knew the prowess of Ram. But he made that wrong choice. And later on, the whole battle, the huge battle that took place. But essentially, what happened in that battle? You know, he initially bested all the Vanara generals. But Lord Ram used Vayu Astra to first cut off his one hand. He had a huge pike in his hand. And he used it to kill the animal, monkeys. But Lord Ram cut off that pike there. Cut off the hand itself. Then he cut off the second hand with another Vayu Astra. Then with two Indra Astras, cut off the legs. And then with a Brahma Astra, he cut off his head. And his head was so huge that when the head went and fell on a wall, on the wall of Lanka, the whole wall collapsed. And by the power of Brahma Astra, his whole body was raised and thrown into the ocean. And when the body fell in the ocean, a tidal wave went and struck Lanka. So there was a triple devastation of Lanka. First was the destruction of Kumbhakarna. Second was the falling of the wall. And the third was the tidal wave. And the Ravana was totally devastated when the news came to him. He fainted actually at that time, when he heard the news of Kumbhakarna's death. But the point is that Kumbhakarna considered his duty to his brother greater than the path of morality. He knew Ravana had made a mistake. He chastised Ravana for making the mistake. But rather than telling Ravana to correct the mistake, he said, I will be by your side. So here he made a big blunder. Although he knew what was the right thing, he did not try to correct it. He rather tried to justify it, like yesterday we were discussing. On the other hand, now some people may consider Vibhishan to be a betrayer. In fact, actually, why to speak of some people, the Vanaras, when first Vibhishan came there, Vibhishan came in by the airway, flying. He had mystic powers, and he stood in the air. And he told, there was Sugriva and the other monkeys were there. He told them that, I am the brother of Ravana and I have come to side with Ram. So at that time, Sugriva immediately went to Ram and told him, actually, I think this is a trick of the Rakshasas. They have come to deceive us so that when we are unaware, they will trap us. And Lord Ram called assembly and all the Vanaras were there. And he asked the opinion of all of them. So Sugriva said, we should not accept him at all. Then another general, Jambavan said, Angada said that actually, you know, if he has left his own blood brother, then what is the guarantee that he will not leave us? One who can betray one master can betray another master also. We cannot trust him. Jambavan said, maybe we have to watch him very carefully and see his actions, and then we can decide whether to accept him or not. Then Hanuman spoke. Hanuman had been silent all the time. The Lord Rama asked him, Hanuman, what do you say? He said, actually, I have observed him. And from his face and from his words, I do not see any deception in him. If he has come to us, we should accept him. Then Lord Ram said, I have heard all of what all of you have said. I have considered it deeply. Can I speak a few words now? So there is a Lord Ram's humility. He is the king. He said, can I speak a few words now? Lord said, surely, surely. Lord Ram said that as far as I am concerned, Lord Ram in the Ramayana normally does not manifest his divinity. Only a few places where he manifests his divinity. Here is one place. He says, Lord Ram says, if anybody comes to take shelter of me, I have taken a vow that I will grant him eternal fearlessness. Sakrudeva prapannoyam tavasmi tichayachate abhayam sarvadatasmai dadame tadvratam mama. That I will grant him everlasting fearlessness. He said, Hanuman, what you spoke was right. There is no duplicity in Vibhishan, and therefore we should give him shelter. But I say that even if somebody comes to take shelter of me with a duplicitous motive, still the very fact that he has come to take shelter of me, I will not refuse him shelter. And he said, even if Ravana comes here right now and asks for shelter, I will give him shelter. Bring him right away. And then Vibhishan was brought inside, and Vibhishan sat, was offered a seat. And then Lord Ram told him, I welcome to you to my camp, O Lankesh. And he sprang up. He said, I am not Lankesh. He said, Ravana is Lankesh. He says, you are going to be the future Lankesh. And Vibhishan said, I have not come to your side with the greed of power. I only came because you are my eternal Lord. And I give my best advice to Ravana. But not only did he reject my advice, but he even rejected me, humiliated me. And that's why I have come to take your shelter, my Lord. So Lord Ram said, I know, and I am pleased with you. And for your surrender, I will reward you by making you Lankesh. He said, Hanuman, get the sacred water. And there itself, Lord Ram performed the coronation ceremony of Vibhishan. And when Ravana heard this, he was thunderstruck. You know, in his presence, somebody else has been coronated as the king. That is like it is already his last rite has been performed. It's like that. And Ravana, just to hide his fear, he said, what a joke! One beggar has coronated another beggar as the king. And he tried to hide his fear. But he did not know this was not a beggar. So the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune. But that's how Vibhishan surrendered. And then Vibhishan played crucial roles in the subsequent battle that took place. And there are at least three incidents in the Ramayana where the Leela as it manifested, if Vibhishan had not been there, there could have been disaster. Of course, Lord Ram can destroy everyone without even the assistance. But the way the Leela manifested, Vibhishan played a crucial role. You know, after Kumbhakarna's fall, Ravana was totally devastated. Then Indrajit said, I will go and fight. And Indrajit went and used attack invisibly. And he mortally wounded Rama and Lakshman. Then at that time, it was Vibhishan who suggested that actually the only solution to this is that we have to get medicinal herbs. And that those medicinal herbs, Sushen said, we don't know where they are available. Sushen was a monkey who had some knowledge of medicine. So Vibhishan said, they might be available over there. So Vibhishan was actually the person who thought that we should consult Sushen, and then the whole solution came out. The second time, then when they were revived, Indrajit came again to attack. Indrajit came to attack. At that time, first time Lord Lakshman was very angry because they were attacking invisibly. He said, I will use the Shabdabedi Brahmastra and kill him. Shabdabedi is a weapon which can attack invisible enemies. So Lord Ram said, no, a Brahmastra can cause the destruction of the whole universe. We should not use it prematurely. But second time when Indrajit came again, after Ram and Lakshman were revived, then he said, now I am going to use the Brahmastra. And Indrajit realized it. So Indrajit fled from there. And then he came back and he was attacking the Vanaras. And suddenly Hanuman was trying to fight back. He was in the sky, was throwing boulders at him. He saw that there was somebody else with him on his chariot. And he looked carefully, it was a female. And he looked more carefully and he saw it was Sita. And Indrajit started laughing demoniacally. He said, "This was the Sita for whom you are fighting? Watch how I kill her." And started beating her mercilessly. And Sita was screaming. And then Hanuman shouted, "You coward! Why are you beating a weak woman? If you have courage, fight with me." He hurled a huge boulder at him. Indrajit just laughed and raised his chariot upwards. And then he took a sword and right in front of Hanuman's eyes, he slashed that form of Sita into two. And Hanuman went mad with anger. He just ripped up huge pieces of mountain and hurled them at Indrajit. And he just laughed and he just broke those pieces with his arrows. Tears started coming from Hanuman's eyes. He told the Vanaras, "Please desist from the fight. The purpose for which we are fighting is now over. Let us go and report to Ram and ask him what to do." And he went to Ram. And when the news reached Ram, Lord Ram just fell unconscious. And all the Vanaras started lamenting. And at that time Vibhishan came there. And Vibhishan asked, "What is the matter?" He saw Ram unconscious, he saw all the Vanaras crestfallen. And Hanuman told him the news. Vibhishan became very grave. And then he started shaking his head. He said, "It is for Sita that Ravana fought the whole war. It is impossible that Ravana will let Sita be killed. This is a trick done by Indrajit to purchase time." So he went and told this to Ram. Ram was so shaken. "Please repeat, I didn't understand." And told him the whole thing. He said, and Lord Ram was doing this Leela, so he said that Indrajit has been given a benediction that if he performs a particular yajna in a place called Nikumbhil, then he will be invincible. So he has done this ruse to get time for that. "Lakshman, you should go immediately to Nikumbhil, and before he completes the yajna, you should kill him." And then Nikumbhil was quite far away. So Vibhishan pointed a secret way, a short way. And when he reached there, then the Vanara started going and stopping, attacking while the yajna was going on. And the Rakshasas were completely taken by surprise and overpowered. And they called out to Indrajit for help. Indrajit didn't want to move because he knew that if he got up from the yajna, it would be fatal for him. But the whole yajna was stopped because of the sudden attack and finally he had to get up. And he came out and he saw Vibhishan. He started hurling abuses at Vibhishan. He said, "You are not only a Kuladrohi, you are not only a Bhratradrohi, you are also a Putradrohi. I am like your son. And today, you have revealed to the enemy my weakness." He started chastising him. "How can you call yourself a Rakshasa? How can a person be a traitor like you?" So Vibhishan heard it very calmly. And he replied, "Your intelligence is so perverted, O fool, that you do not understand who is the traitor and who is the friend. It is you and your father who are the traitors for the whole Rakshas kul. You are going to cause the destruction and I am trying to save it from the destruction. And for yours and your father's misdeeds, today you will reap the consequences." And then there was a fierce battle. And eventually, Lakshman overpowered and killed Indrajit. So Vibhishan played crucial roles in several times. And his role was very decisive actually. So now here we see that eventually Vibhishan was not only coronated as the king. But when Vibhishan came eventually, Vibhishan was coronated and Lord Ram immediately said, "I want to leave. Because the 14 years are getting over." And Bharata said that if there's one day more, then you will find my body dead. You will not find me alive. So Lord Ram said, "Not only do I have to go back, but I have to go back immediately." And Vibhishan said, "Please take the Pushpaka and go." But Vibhishan was feeling so bad that actually I could not serve the Lord. He has come to my palace, but I'm not able to offer me hospitality. He said, "You're offering me the Pushpaka as a hospitality." Then Lord Ram understood the heart of Vibhishan. He said, you please come with me now. And then Vibhishan also came for the coronation. And then when Vibhishan was going back after that, so at that time Vibhishan said, my dear Lord, I cannot live without you. So then Lord Ram made his own deity, manifested the deity and gave it to Vibhishan, and that is Ranganath. So Ranganath is a Vibhishanarpita Rangakarama. So normally the standard is the deity's face in the east. So Lord Ranganath said, I will not go to Lanka. I will stay on the way, but I will forever be beholding you. That's why the Ranganath is the only deity that is actually facing north. Sorry, facing south. Because that is the place where Vibhishan's kingdom was. So Vibhishan surrendered himself to the Lord. And what happened? The Lord offered himself back to him in return. So that was the reward that Vibhishan got, unlike what Kumbhakarna got, for his misdirected loyalty. Now, loyalty is a good thing, but misdirected loyalty, loyalty for a person who is on an unrighteous path, is disastrous. So now, this is how Ravana was killed, this is Kumbhakarna, this is Vibhishan surrendering. Oh, this last line is gone anyway. So now, this is an important concept. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of our great acharyas, categorizes human beings into different levels based on their understanding of morality and their understanding of God. So he says the lowest are the godless atheists. Sorry, the godless immoralists. They are neither moral, they are neither believers in God. So anaitik nirishwarvadi. So then he says higher than that are the naitik nirishwarvadi. These people don't believe in God, but they say, actually, you should be honest, you should be good, you should be kind. See, at least they are better, they are following some morality. But still they don't believe in God. Then there is a peculiar category called as anaitik Ishwarvadi. These people believe in God, but they think morality is not important. Think, oh, we believe in God, that's good enough. You can do whatever you want, ultimately. So, see, some religions have the idea that you just accept a particular person as your savior, and then he will take all your sins. And after that you can continue your sins. You can just confess your sins and it's over. So, that is actually not proper. Then there are Naitik Ishwarvadis. That means those people accept morality and they accept God. But within that there are two categories. Some people consider that actually there is no such thing as God, but morality is necessary in society and God is a useful fiction to make people moral. So therefore, let people believe in God. But actually, there is no God. They think God is just a concept. But higher than these are the people who say that God exists. But they consider God must be subordinate to morality. That means God must also follow moral actions. And that's why sometimes Krishna's actions are bewildering to people. Because Krishna steals butter. Krishna sometimes apparently instigates the Pandavas to do wrong things. So they say, how can such a God be immoral? But there's a very important principle to understand here, that God is not bound by morality. Why? So that is the highest level, is a Shuddha Bhakta. The pure devotee, he understands that God's supremacy means his supremacy even beyond morality. If we say God is bound by morality, then morality becomes supreme. Then morality becomes God, because God by definition is that which is supreme. So actually God is superior even to morality. So Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur would give a very interesting example for this. He said that if somebody decides that I want to see the sun, in the daytime you just look at the sky, you can see the sun. I mean, without looking at the sky also you can see the sun. But in the night time, if somebody decides I want to see the sun, so he says, okay, I will do what? I'll get a torch. Torch is not able to show me the sun, I'll increase the wattage of the torch. Now he says, no matter how much you increase the wattage of the torch, you cannot see the sun using the torch. The torch is very useful for us when we have to find our way in the dark. So morality is like that torch. Moral principles are essential for us. If there are no moral principles, we will get misled. But with our moral principles, if you like to try to look for God, God is like the sun. God is the source of all morality, the source of all illumination. Even the illumination that comes in the torch is ultimately recycled sunlight. So God is the source of all morality. If we try to use our morality to examine God, then we will never be able to understand God. Now, why do we need morality? We need morality because we have selfish desires. And these selfish desires will make us act immorally. But God has no selfish desires. Yesterday we were singing that verse, Sulabham, Surudam, Sukhadam. So, Surudam, he's always the well-wisher of everyone. He is selfless. He has no selfish desires. And that's why there is no chance of God falling prey to immorality. That's why even if God apparently acts immorally, whatever he does is for the good of everyone. The end result is always good for everyone. So therefore, actually God is above morality. And when somebody acts for the pleasure of God, even that action is above morality. So when Vibhishan acts for the pleasure of Lord Ram, even if he goes against his own brother, that is the supreme morality, that is the higher morality. So God is not bound by morality. God is above morality. And actually the Bhagavad, the Vedic scriptures, you know, they just don't give us some simple moral instructions. They show us situations, complex situations, and they show how things go wrong. So, you know, there are two sets of examples. There are examples of personalities who sacrifice God for worldly morality. So Kumbhakarna sacrificed the cause of God for the sake of his worldly morality, of his devotion to his brother. Similarly, Karna. Karna emerges from the Mahabharata as a heroic but tragic character because of his wrong choice. You know, before the final battle on the 17th day, when Karna and Arjuna confront each other, so at that time Karna's chariot wheel starts going under the ground. And Karna shouts out at Arjuna, he said, "Oh Arjuna, remember the codes of virtue. And do not cherish the thoughts cherished by cowards. Now wait till I am properly equipped to fight with you and then let us have a fair fight." And Arjuna lowers his bow and waits. And Krishna shouts back to Karna. He says, "It is fortunate indeed, O Karna, that today you remember the codes of morality. Where was your knowledge of morality when six of you together attacked 16-year-old Abhimanyu and killed him? Was it morality that made you suggest to Duryodhana that now that Draupadi is our maid servant, let us bring her to the palace and have her stripped naked? Was it morality that made you conspire to burn the Pandavas alive in the house of Lak in Varanavart? Was it morality that impelled you to participate with Shakuni in the rigged gambling match?" And he gave a long list of all the atrocities performed by Karna in the team. So then he said, "If it was morality at that time, then Arjuna will use the same morality to kill you today." And he told Arjuna, "Shoot right now." Then Karna was destroyed. So actually before the war started, when Krishna came as Shantidut, at that time, Krishna, the next morning before he departed, said that, "I want to meet with Karna." And they met in the chariot, just outside the city. So Krishna told Karna, "You are not a Sutaputra, you are the son of the of Kunti, the oldest son, and you deserve to be the king." And he told him everything. And then Karna said, "I know Kunti has already told me all this." And he said, Karna, interesting speaking this, Karna said, "I had a dream. In my dream I saw that Duryodhana was wearing a black dress, was shaven headed, and he was being dragged on a cart driven by donkeys towards the nether worlds. That indicates his destruction." And he said, "I saw Yudhishthira dressed in white silk, wearing a crown, on a chariot drawn by horses, being taken to the higher worlds." So I know, because Duryodhana is immoral, he is going to meet with destruction. Bhima will kill Duryodhana and Arjuna will kill me. But still, for all these years, I have enjoyed sovereignty over Angadesh by the grace of Duryodhana. And it is by his faith in my faithfulness and prayer and prowess that he has dared to wage a war against the Pandavas. How can I betray him right now? I know I am going to die, but I would rather die being faithful to my friend Duryodhana." So at that time, when he heard this, Krishna embraced Karna and he said, Vinashakale Viparita Buddhi. And he said, our next meeting will be on the battlefield. So, actually, you see, Karna, in one sense, he is portrayed in, what happens is, anything which is sacred, anything which is popular, you play around with it and give new interpretations, new twists, and those become very popular. So Karna is portrayed as a hero over here. Well, he is a hero, but a hero who made a wrong ethical choice. So Karna knew that he was doing wrong. Now, if he had not been a superficial thinker, if he had been a deep thinker, Anga Desh, which was given by Duryodhana to him, whom did it belong to? The Pandavas. He had been taken it from the Pandavas. The kingdom belonged to the Pandavas first of all. And even if they said there is some dispute, no, Dhritarashtra was an older brother, so it belonged to Duryodhana only. Still, ultimately, the kingdom belongs to whom? It belongs to Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, the Supreme Lord. That Supreme Lord is asking him that, come and fight on the side of the Pandavas. Prabhupada would give the example of how the communists made people into atheists in Russia. He said they would go to the, they would have these big trucks filled with bread outside the church. And when the peasants would go to the church, they would tell them, so where are you going? He says, we are going to the church. For what? To pray to God for bread. Of course, Prabhupada later on also spoke that when you go to God and pray for bread, that shows your love for bread, not your love for God. So it's just love for bread. But still, where are you going? We're going for bread. So okay, go and pray. And then they would pray and come out of the church. And so where did you get your bread? Said, no. And now you pray to us. Oh, communists, please give us our daily bread. And they had their trucks ready and they would give the bread. Now, who is better? Is God better or we better? So you are better. Then they would all become atheists. So Prabhupada said that these communists are so foolish, these people are so foolish that they don't understand that they went inside the church and prayed to God to give them bread, and that same God gave them the bread outside through the communists. So, a superficial thinker is not able to go to the ultimate cause. They stop at just at the immediate cause. Similarly, Karna could not see his relationship beyond his relationship with his friend. Kumbhakarna could not see his relationship beyond his relationship with his brother. That is a bodily relationship, but beyond that we are souls. And as souls, we have an eternal relationship with God. And that is our most important relationship. So now let us see examples of personalities who sacrifice worldly morality for Krishna. So one example, of course, is Vibhishan, who gave up his love for his older brother for the sake of Krishna. We see Prahlad Maharaj, his own father was demoniac. So Prahlad Maharaj did not delight when Hiranyakashipu was killed, but still he went and offered a garland to Narasimhadev. So we see Bharat. Tomorrow we'll discuss more about Bharat. But he rejected Kaikeyi completely when Kaikeyi sided with, Kaikeyi caused the exile of Ram. We see Bali Maharaj, you know, his guru was Shukracharya, and this is the ultimate rejection. The guru is supposed to take us towards God. How can we reject the word of the guru? But if the guru takes us away from God, then we can reject even the guru. Now all of us have two kinds of relationships. We have horizontal relationships with the people in this world, and we have a vertical relationship with God. And all our horizontal relationships are meant to further our vertical relationship. In India, people say Matrudeva Bhava, Pitrudeva Bhava. That's fine. But the mother and father are not God. Prahlad Maharaj didn't say that to his parents. But the mother and father are meant to act as the representatives of God. And when they help their children to go closer towards God, then obedience to the horizontal relationship strengthens the vertical relationship. The parents tell the children, please go to the temple. It's like sometimes in the temple we see the father comes and offers obeisances, and the child is small, he looks around, he says, what is his father doing? He also offers obeisances. So just that's what his father is doing. So there, abiding by the horizontal relationship helps us strengthen the vertical relationship. And that is the purpose of human relationships. Sometimes people think when I have to practice spiritual life, I have to abandon all relationships. No, we have to spiritualize all relationships. And that is actually the original purpose of relationships. you know, taking care of the family members, that is important. But we see that this is done even by the plants and by the animals. You know, there is a weaver bird which, you know, when the she bird lays eggs, at that time both of them, they find a hollow in a tree and they lay the eggs over there and they cover the hollow completely so that no predator will come and eat it. Both of them, they use their beaks to bring some brambles and twigs and leaves and material to seal it up. And then both of them, as the eggs hatch, so first the female bird goes inside the egg and she sits on the eggs and she hatches the eggs. Now when the female bird is inside, the male bird is going out and searching for food. And he drops the food in for the she bird. And then as the eggs start in hatching, then there are documentaries made on this. So the he bird has to work more and more because he has to feed not only the she bird, but also the birdlets, the babies. And then finally, then he says, he calls the bird, you know, now I can't do it. You also have to take a job now. Come out. So then both of them, they break it, they come out, and then they seal the whole thing. And then both of them go out and search for food and they drop the food. And inside, remarkably, some eggs have hatched earlier. So those eggs, the birdlets are bigger. And when the food goes in, actually the bigger birdlets get it. But amazingly, those bigger birdlets take it and give it to the smaller birdlets. And later on, they eat their own food. So the culture of caring and sharing at a family level, that is there even in the animals. And for the parents to take care of their children, for the family members to take care of the family members, that is natural and necessary, but it is not spiritual. It is natural and necessary, but it is not spiritual. Natural means, how are the parents attracted to the children? How are the children attracted to the parents? That is natural. That is a product of nature. And it is necessary. If the parents did not feel that affection of the children would not be able to go through the early infancy of their lives. Children, whichever species it may be. It's natural. But is the bird taking care of their offspring spiritual? No. It's spiritual only when the soul is involved. When the soul is connected with God, then it is spiritual. So in India, there is a big misconception that if we just do our worldly duties, that itself is spiritual. That itself is our dharma. Yes, it is dharma, but there are two kinds of dharma. There is paradharma and there is aparadharma. Aparadharma means worldly duty and paradharma is spiritual duty. So there is a big mistake in India, misconception in India, that the worldly duty is the same as the spiritual duty. That if I take care of my family members, if I have children, I get them educated, I get them married, I get them settled, then itself I am a religious person. Yes, this is a duty. It has to be done. But if you see, even the animals are doing that duty. So that doesn't make us spiritual. We become spiritual only when we connect our soul with God and we connect the souls of our dependents with God. So that is our duty as human beings. Otherwise we are doing our duty, but we are doing the duty at a worldly level, at a level which even the animals are doing. So do we have to sacrifice our worldly relationships? Not necessarily. We try to spiritualize our relationships. You know, we try to connect ourselves with Krishna and we try to connect others with Krishna, those whom we love. And we cannot do it in a preachy, aggressive, dominating way. Basically, it is our actions that should preach. You know, people should feel, our relatives, our family members should feel that by becoming a devotee, my relative has become a better human being, has become a better father, a better husband, a better wife, a better human being. And when they see that, they will also become devotees. So we may preach with our words, but more important is to preach with our actions. And it's best that we don't preach. If we have to preach to our relatives, get them to some programs where they can meet some other devotees whom they can preach, who can preach to them. Because, you know, for our relatives, we may start seeing them spiritually, but they don't see us spiritual till now. They say, he's just my relative. I knew how worldly he was, how materially minded he was, and what he's teaching me, big philosophy now. They won't hear us. So rather than we trying to lecture them, bring them in association, and the association can have powerful effects. So It's only in extreme situations when our worldly relationships are not only not being spiritualized, but they're stopping us from spiritualizing, from developing our relationship with God. Then we may have to suspend it temporarily. But that is an extreme situation. And even when we become brahmacharis, we don't cut off our relationship with our parents. You know, we just, those of us who have become brahmacharis, we feel that this is the best way we can serve society and serve our parents. Many of our parents, initially they are very upset, but later on, they also become devotees. They start appreciating because they see the sons of other parents, you know, they don't even respect their parents and they go off, many of them fall prey to bad things. And then they start seeing that actually, you know, my sons who become devotees, they're actually better behaved. And they start becoming devotees. So, the thing is, we don't have to cut off worldly relations. We have to spiritualize them. But if there is a conflict between the two, if there is a conflict between doing a worldly duty and doing our duty to Krishna, we learn from the example of Vibhishan that we have to choose our duty for Krishna. And how we implement that, for that we need careful guidance. We cannot do it haphazardly. We cannot do it arbitrarily. Vibhishan himself was so wise, but still he took the blessing of Kaikashi. And then he took the decision. So how we can implement Krishna consciousness in a practical way when there is this ethical crisis that comes, that we will need careful guidance. But philosophically we should be clear that just doing our worldly duty doesn't make us spiritual. We become spiritual only when we connect ourselves with Krishna. In this last example, we don't have time to talk about it now. The gopis, it's an elaborate subject. The gopis, they are thought to be immoral because they perform the rasa with Krishna. But actually Krishna is the supreme lord of all living entities. And Krishna was not dancing. The gopis' bodies were lying in their homes. Krishna was dancing with their actually spiritual forms. So it has got nothing to do with worldly immorality. But even if somebody argues that it's worldly immorality, still the gopis actually sacrifice the worldly morality for the supreme morality of satisfying Krishna. Aradhyo Bhagavan Rajeshtane Saddham Vrindavanam Ramya Kachida Upasana Vrajavadhu Vargena Vakalpita. It's described that among all the forms of God that can be worshipped, Krishna in Vrindavan. Aradhyo Bhagavan Rajeshtane. He is the most attractive, he is the supreme. And among all the spiritual abodes, Saddham Vrindavanam. Vrindavan is the highest. And among all the devotees, the gopis, Ramya Kachida Upasana Vrajavadhu Vargena Vakalpita. There is no form of worship higher than the form of worship of the gopis. They are the topmost devotees. Therefore, when we sacrifice anything for Krishna, it's not never immoral. It's actually the supreme morality. And we should know, even if there are some repercussions, some things appear to go wrong, ultimately Krishna will work it out for our ultimate benefit and for the benefit of everyone else. So this is the prayer which Lord Ram, or rather the promise which Lord Ram made to when Hanuman said, you should accept Vibhishan as a surrendered servant. So Lord Ram made this promise. So let us repeat this verse and we'll conclude the class. So Lord Ram is saying, Sakrut. Sakrut means even once. Prapanno yam. My dear Lord, I have surrendered to you. So we'll face many difficulties in our life. Instead of trying to solve them at a worldly level, if we try to surrender to the Lord. If we say, just, my dear Lord, I have surrendered to you. Tava asmi, I am yours. Iti cha yachate. Yachate means petitions, begs. Abhayam, fearlessness. Sarvada, for all time I'll give. Tasmai, to that person, dadami, I will give. Etad vratam, this is my promise. So Lord is taking out, actually vrata is not just a promise, it's a vow. Vow is much more serious. So Lord is saying, I will take a vow that anybody who shall take shelter of me even once, for that taking shelter once, I will give him fearlessness eternally. So, whatever we need to sacrifice for Krishna's sake, we should not hesitate. Because, just as Vibhishan was supremely rewarded, Krishna will reward us supremely also. Sakrudeva prapannoyam Tavasmi iti chayachate Abhayam sarvada tasmai Dadami etad vratam mama. Shri Ramachandra Bhagavan ki. Are there any questions? Yes, please.
I wanted to ask, I mean,
Yes. You're audible, you can speak. Sorry? Karna was not exactly Shudra, he was a Suta. Suta is a charioteer, it's called a Suta. So, actually, the Mahabharata also describes the previous lives of Karna. So, Karna was a demon named Sahasra Kavacha. So, the Sahasra Kavacha, he had 1,000 Kavachas on his body. And these 1,000 Kavachas, he had a vow that, as soon as the Kavacha would be destroyed, it would appear again. And all the 1,000 Kavachas had to be destroyed at once. And then he would be killed. So at that time, the Lord Narayan Rishi, you know, he took Durvagras and he went and challenged, he had become very arrogant. So he had challenged Narayan Rishi. Narayan Rishi said, you know, this is a meditative place. He had gone to Badrikashram. He says, why do you want to fight over here? Come and sit and meditate. He said, no, I don't want to meditate. I want to fight with the Rakshasa. He was like a demon. So then he started attacking. So Narayanji said, okay, fine. I want to fight. He just took some Durvagras. And by his mystic power, he expanded it into 1,000 parts and hurled it at him. And right in front of Sahasra Kavacha's eyes, the Durvagras started smashing all his Kavachas. And he just looked around. He had no shelter anywhere. So he used whatever mystic power he had and he leapt high into the sky. And he went to the sun. He says, please grant me shelter. The sun god didn't want to grant him shelter, but a kshatriya, sun god is also kshatriya, somebody asked him for shelter, he cannot refuse. So he accepted him. And then sun god also knew that this person is a demon. So I had to get rid of him. That's why when Kunti prayed, you know, Kunti had that blessing that Durvasa had given the blessing to her that, you know, if you chant this mantra and call any god, that god will come and the god will give you a son. So, at that time, Kunti was just a small girl. And she playfully chanted. She was lying in her couch. She looked at the sun and she really wondered, will this mantra really work? She just chanted the mantra and called the sun. Immediately, the sun came there. He said, now I'll give you a child. Hey, no, I don't want a child. I was just playful. Said, no. You have called me? How can my visit go waste? I must give you a child. Actually, Suryadeva also wanted to dump that child. So, because that, who was that? That was Sahasra Kavacha. So, that's why when he was born, his 999 Kavachas had been destroyed and last moment he had survived. That's why he had one Kavacha left. And that's how Karna had that one Kavacha. So Karna had a demoniac background from his past. And that's how he made those demoniac decisions. Those wrong decisions. Okay? Of course, he also admits to Bhishma that actually some of the things that he did was due to bad association. That bad association was not the Suta association, that was Duryodhana's association. For example, he tells both Bhishma and Krishna that he bitterly regretted asking the suggestion of summoning Draupadi to the assembly. So he said, but I did that just to please Duryodhana. So what happens is, once we associate with certain people, you know, to please them, we have to speak and do certain things. So Karna is a good example of a person who actually was spoiled by bad association. And that bad association was primarily Duryodhana's association. And Duryodhana also, although Karna felt, Duryodhana is so kind to me, Duryodhana had no intention of actually being kind to Karna. There was the exhibition of arms. At that time, Arjuna excelled in everything. You know, at the end of the Gurukul, at that time, Drona told that let all the students exhibit their skills. So Arjuna excelled everyone. And then Duryodhana was so envious. At that time, Karna came over there. And Karna said, I will exhibit the skills equal to and greater than Arjuna. And at that time, Karna equaled everything that Arjuna had done. And when Duryodhana saw that, and that time Duryodhana felt, this person I must get on my side. Because he is the only person who can save me from Arjuna. So he had his own vested agenda So he conferred him the Anga Pradesh, not because he loved him, but because he wanted Karna on his side so that he could fulfill his agenda against the Pandavas. So actually Karna got used, and he thought while he was being used, he thought actually he is being helped. And that's how he was spoiled. Okay. Any other questions? Yes. Is Hanumanji considered a Vishnu Tattva? Actually, never. Hanumanji, in fact, there is a prayer, which a famous prayer, I just forget the Sanskrit. Hanumanji says that, I consider liberation as hellish because it deprives me from service to my Lord Ram. So, Hanumanji is eternally a devotee of Lord Ram. And he is an expansion of Lord Shiva manifested through Vayu. So, he is certainly not Vishnu Tattva. He is expansion of Lord Shiva. That's what is Shambhutattva. So, he is certainly a very powerful person. And even the devotees can be worshipped, but not separate from the Lord. So, we may glorify Hanumanji, but the glorification of Hanuman is as the greatest of Ram Bhaktas, the most powerful of the Vanaras in the army of Lord Ram. That is wonderful. That we can do. That depends on the consciousness with which people are worshipping over there. You know, if we understand Hanumanji to be a devotee of Lord Ram, and then we worship him over there, that is okay. Although Hanumanji himself will not be pleased just by having his worship without the worship of his Lord. That's why you will see traditionally how it will be is like I had gone to Nasik. In Nasik, there are several places where Sitaram Lakshman temples are there, and opposite to that there is a Hanuman temple. So the Lord is beholding his devotee, and the devotee is beholding the Lord. Just like in ISKCON we have Prabhupada beholding the Lord, and the Lord beholding Prabhupada. So like that. That is the ideal thing. So that means Hanumanji almost has like a separate temple, but that is in the vicinity of Lord Ram's temple. That's how ideal it should be. Devotion only to Hanuman, can it lead us back to Godhead? Well, if somebody wants to go back to Godhead. You know, many times people worship Hanuman just for worldly benefits. You know, I had gone to Varanasi. There, I had gone for a program. So there was a temple over there. Above that temple only. You know, I was shocked when I read that. Tum toho bal brahmachari, mujhe de do ek nari. So actually, most people when they worship, they have very little conception of going back to God at all. You know, probably going to a temple it's like going to a market with a shopping list but without the money. Or maybe lesser money to offer as a donation. So people just go for mostly material purposes. So, in India, religion is mostly pious materialism. It's not spirituality. Because, although people understand that, you know, I have there is something called soul. But their idea is that I am the body and I have a soul. But that is not the truth. I am the soul and I have a body. So the priority is completely different. You think, I have some small part which will continue in the next life. No, that is the essential person. So, no, it's mostly what goes on in the name of religion is pious materialism. It's not really spirituality. And people are not so much interested in spiritual goals at all. But if somebody is interested in spiritual goal, then Hanumanji will surely guide that person to the right understanding and to the ultimate right destination. Okay. Yes, Prabhu? The Ramayana war. It's not explicitly mentioned in the Ramayana. From what I remember, the war between Lakshman and Indrajit itself went for a long time. It went for 27 days. The total time span is not mentioned because what would happen is Ravana would send one general out and the general would fight for some time, and when that general would be killed, then Ravana would not immediately send the next general. And the Vanaras, initially they were trying to break the wall. But when they saw that they are sending out generals, then they did not try to attack the walls as such. They waited for the attack generals to come out. So there were lulls in between. And I'll have to check. At least in the Valmiki Ramayana, the total period is not mentioned. Okay. Yes, Mata, you had a question? That is in Srirangam. It's in South India. Near Mysore, yeah. It's actually a very famous temple.
Near Mysore,
yeah. It's a place called Srirangam. There's a huge village around it. The whole village is like a spiritual community. Very beautiful place. That deity is lying down. Anantapa, it's like Lord Vishnu lying down. It's a big form. In fact, you know, it's like, if you want to see the Lord's lotus feet, there is one window through which you see. If you want to see the Lord's body, it's another window. If you want to see Lord's face, it's the third window. Large form. Yes, Mataji? Right. Right. Actually, it's described that Vali had a benediction. There are different reasons. My reason is that it said that Vali had a benediction by which whoever would confront him, that person would get half of his power. So it was practically invincible. He had all power. But you see, if the devatas have given some benediction, Lord Ram does not dishonor the word of the devatas. For example, now Hiranyakashipu had a blessing that he would not be killed by any human being or animal. The Lord can come in any form and kill him. But Lord honors the words of his assistants, the devatas. Satyam vidhatum nijabhritya bhashitam. That's why the Lord did like that. Now again, there's another important, as compared to what you made this point today, that as per our today's lesson, we understand that actually the Lord is not bound by morality. So the Lord can act in apparently immoral way. Now Vali, he could have lived on and he would have had to suffer for his misdeeds. But Lord Ram purified him and liberated him. So often, when we see a situation or an event or a person, we see it as separate from its past and its future. Because we don't know the past and the future. But as compared to that, the Lord knows the past and He knows the future consequences also that are going to happen. So even if the Lord apparently does something immoral, actually the Lord does that for the ultimate benefit of the person. And that's why actually Krishna Leela is more difficult to understand than Ram Leela. Because most of the time, Lord Ram acts like an ideal human being. There are few places where Lord Ram challenges our conception of morality. But there are few places where Lord Krishna allows our morality to stay intact. You know, most of the things that Lord Krishna does, He challenges our morality. So actually the Lord is progressively raising us to higher levels of understanding. So first we understand morality and we see how Lord is an ideal person. But later on the Lord takes us to higher level of understanding, that there is something higher than morality also. There is devotion. And there is actually the Lord's benevolence, which is higher than morality. So that's why the Lord does certain things which seem to be immoral, but they are meant to take us to a higher understanding. Okay? Last question. Yes, Matani?
According to what you taught us today, it was Sutrakha who concocted a false story and pushed Rama to affect Sita.
Correct.
I've heard something different from one of my elders.
Yeah.
That it is true that Raman was a great worshipper of Lord Shiva.
See, the Ramayana has been retold. Yes, Hare Krishna. Has been retold by many, many people. And not all of the renditions of the Ramayana are faithful to the original rendition. The original and the most authoritative rendition of the Ramayana is the Valmiki Ramayana. So whatever is in accordance with the philosophy and the storyline is acceptable. If something is an embellishment of the storyline, a further addition of detail which is not there, that is also fine. But if something is contrary, then that cannot be accepted. Now the Valmiki Ramayana describes what was the nature of the bhakti, of the Shiva bhakti of Ravana. Actually Ravana, after he got the benediction from Brahma, became intoxicated with his power and started going around the universe, terrorizing everyone. And then when he came to Kailash Parvat, at that time he said, what is this Kailash Parvat? And he just put his arms under it and started shaking it. And Lord Shiva and Parvati were sitting on top, and suddenly Parvati started shaking. What happened? So Lord Shiva said, no, this is Ravana exhibiting his playfulness. And Lord Shiva just touched his toe to the Kailash Parvat, and the whole Kailash Parvat came crashing down. And Ravana's 20 hands got crushed. And he was screaming and screaming and screaming, and nothing was happening, shaking. And Ravana realized that the only way now I can save myself is by pleasing Lord Shiva. Then he offered prayers to Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is called Ashutosh. Ashu means quick, Tosh is pleased. So he was pleased quickly. And then he said, you have offered your prayers to me, so I am pleased with you. Then, actually he said, then if you are pleased, please give me your weapons. So he gave him the weapons. So that is fine. So if you see his worship, he never went to please Lord Shiva. It was simply opportunistic that he worshipped. And he saw this is one means by which I am gaining power, so let me do it. But he was never a selfless worshipper of Lord Shiva. That's the first thing. And second thing is that, you know, it's not that if you have to be redeemed, you have to be killed by the Lord. One can become devoted to the Lord and one can be redeemed also. So, you know, there is a tendency in some renditions of the Ramayana to portray everyone in the Ramayana as a devotee itself. And if you portray everyone as a devotee, there is another rendition which says that actually Ram went to Kaikeyi and told her, that, you know, you please go to Dasharatha and tell him that I should be exiled. Now if we start taking this like this, then yesterday we were discussing that we can learn from the epics at three levels. The literal purification that takes place by hearing it, the ethical lessons we learn by the choices that the people make, and there are deeper symbolic or metaphorical lessons also. So if we start saying everybody is acting according to the will of the Lord, then there is no ethical lesson to be learned over there. See, everything that happens according to the sanction of the Lord. But that doesn't mean that everything that happens is according to the will of the Lord. Now, if a terrorist goes and detonates a bomb and kills thousands of people, is that the will of the Lord? No. That is the sanction of the Lord. The Lord sanctions because that person has the evil desire, okay, you do it. And you will have to bear the karma for that. But it's not the will of the Lord. It's the sanction of the Lord. So similarly, whatever Ravana did was sanctioned by the Lord. But that was not the will of the Lord. It is not necessary that we have to become a demon and be killed by the Lord to be redeemed. One can become a devotee and be redeemed also. That's a much more graceful way to be redeemed. Okay? Thank you very much. Shri Ramachandra Bhagwan ki jai, Shila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktavinda ki jai, Kai Gaur Premanande. Yeah, prasadam will be downstairs in the same hall as yesterday. Hare Krishna. Okay, what time? 6:30, because 6 o'clock another devotee is meeting me. 6:30. Okay. 208.